Welcome to The Pin Down, your Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys.
And I'm Blake Silverman, writer for Detroit Bad Boys, covering everything from the Pistons to the NBA draft and the Motor City Cruise.
Blake, welcome back. Guys, so obviously I've been teasing a little bit, right? Blake had some pretty big news. I mentioned it last week on the episode. Blake, man, break your news. Break the news.
Yeah, thank you. And first of all, thank you to Kyle Metz, who we were going to have as a guest on the show, but filled in for me, and then Sean Corp, who filled in last minute. But my wife gave birth to our first child last week, which is why I've been kind of MIA the past couple weeks. So we have a baby boy who's a week old today. So I've spent the past week trying to learn how to become a dad, be a little more tired than I normally am, but everything is great. Couldn't be better. Everything went smoothly. So yeah, thank you, Wes, for holding down the fort while I was out.
And I mean, look, right, we're crazy Pistons fans. I think that is like the only good reason that you could have for missing this podcast, you know? Like, what incredible news for you, for your wife, for you guys' family. Couldn't be more happy for you guys. I was so excited when you sent me that text. Like, yeah. This is, man, we're so happy for you over here, Blake.
Thank you. Yeah, and we have our newest Pistons fan in the world. So hopefully when he's a little bit older, going to get him down to some games. And, you know, we've already watched a few games and got him watching film already. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, I love it. All right, let's dive in. Let's not beat around the bush any longer, right? The Pistons, by far the most active team on Thursday's NBA trade deadline, okay? So, look, yesterday, let's just break down all of the news in order, all right? So, they trade with Utah. They bring back Simone Fontecchio. They send out Kevin Knox, Gabriel Procida, and a second-round pick. They then also trade with the Minnesota Timberwolves. They send them Monte Morris. The Pistons get back Troy Brown Jr., Shake Milton, and a second-round pick. And then today, Thursday, they make a trade with the 76ers. It's kind of a fake second, right? You know, the Sixers are never going to see that second-round pick. So the important thing is that they used the trade exception that trading Marvin Bagley in the Wizards trade a few weeks ago generated for them. And they got Daniel House Jr. and 2 second-round picks. And then, of course, the big one, late in the day, they make a trade with the New York Knicks. They send them Alec Burks and Bojan Bogdanovic, and they get back Quentin Grimes, Malachi Flynn, Evan Fournier, Ryan Arcidiacono, and 2 second-round picks. Now, obviously, if you're listening, that is a lot of names, and all of those names brought the team's roster to about 19 players. So they then cut Ryan Arcidiacono, Daniel House, Killian Hayes, and Joe Harris. So before we go ahead and break down just individually some of the players, right, some of the key names here coming to the Detroit Pistons at this trade deadline, why don't you just give me like your overall thoughts on how this all went down, the activity that they did? Because, you know, we also got to throw in the Marvin Bagley, Isaiah Livers for Muscala and Gallinari trade here too.
Yeah, so what jumps out to me initially, and I think the biggest thing to take away from this deadline for the Pistons is the acquisition of Quentin Grimes and Simone Fontecchio. I think just those two names, if you told me last week that the Pistons would come away from this deadline with them, I would say that's a great deadline. The bigger trade with the Knicks giving up both Alec Burks and Bogdanovic, I apologize. I forget if it was Woj or Shams who broke this one first, but the initial tweet just mentioned the first deal was Alec Burks for Grimes in a couple seconds. If we called it there, I think that would have been a great trade for the Pistons. I was a little surprised that Bojan was thrown in, but once we learned the full deal, my thought was the Knicks probably gave Troy Weaver an ultimatum. They're not getting Grimes if Bojan isn't coming over to the Knicks as well. So I like Grimes. I mean, it was obvious his time with New York wasn't really working out as anyone wanted it to. So I think he's like a prime guy that you want to get into this organization and could maybe break out here, at least be like a long-term piece, maybe even a long-term starter. So him alongside Fontecchio is really what sticks out to me for this deadline. How about you, Wes?
Well, you know what? Let's start here. Okay, so let's talk about the value there with the Knicks trade. Obviously, Burks and Bojan is a pretty high price to pay, at least rotationally for the Pistons. That's about 32-33 points per game that the Pistons are sending out to essentially get back Quentin Grimes. You know, the other guys there, Evan Fournier, Malachi Flynn, probably not going to play all that many minutes here in Detroit the rest of the season. But I will say this, right? Buddy Hield got traded to the 76ers on Thursday for 3 second-round picks. Alec Burks was not going to get you 2 second-round picks and Quentin Grimes, all right? Now, I think that if the deal was Alec Burks for 2 second-round picks, I probably would have been pretty happy. You know, if it's just me, I'm leaning towards saying I would have rather kept Bojan Bogdanović than added Quentin Grimes. But at the same time, you know, you look at a guy like Quentin Grimes, he was a first-round pick, right? He does have a lot of potential. He's a 3-and-D guy, which this team really desperately needs. And, you know, I think if you split it up that way, right, you know, Burks was traded for 2 seconds, Bojan was traded for Quentin Grimes, which is effectively a first-round pick, right? It's a mulligan on a first-round pick, still on his rookie deal, right? Even into next season, he'll be very cheap. He'll still be on that rookie contract. I think it's fair, and the general discomfort that myself and, you know, a lot of other Pistons fans feel with that deal in terms of the value probably indicates that it was a very fair deal. So, you know, it kind of just comes down to, would you rather have Bojan or Grimes? I lean to Grimes, but I like Quentin Grimes quite a bit. You know, I think him and Fontecchio are going to be great pieces here for at least the next couple of years. So, you know, I mean, you're almost splitting hairs at that point, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. And I think the discourse yesterday, Wednesday, when the Pistons made the trade to acquire Fontecchio, was giving up that second round pick that is going to be a pretty good second round pick. And the thought was, would you rather have Fontecchio or would you rather have that pick? I mean, I think when you are talking in the second round, especially in this draft, like if you can get a guy like Fontecchio who has shown that he can be a good shooter, he can defend at least decently, I think that was more important for the Pistons. And then after their deals today, they ended up netting a few additional second round picks. So I understand the argument that that second we gave up to Utah was strong, but I think getting a guy like Fontecchio, who a lot of contenders were interested in, is an interesting move and a great get for this team.
Oh, absolutely. Right. And Fontecchio is the type of player that you would hope to get with that high second round pick. He's just going to be able to contribute right away. You know, it's not going to be a year or 2 year project in order to get him up to that level. So I feel like that's pretty solidly a win there. I do think we do need to note, right, if you include the Marvin Bagley, Isaiah Livers for Gallinari and Muscala deal, where the Pistons sent out a few second-round picks, they also sent out a second-round pick to Utah. So at the end of this whole process from where they started, I believe they are up. They've added 1 second-round pick. So overall, you actually increased the store or the stock in your cupboard there of second-round picks. And we're going to keep saying it, right? With this new CBA, those second-round picks become very, very valuable. You saw a little bit of a preview of it there with the Daniel House deal. The 76ers were willing to pay the second-round picks just to get under that tax threshold that they were button up over onto. So let's shift here. Let's talk about some of these players. So we've identified Simone Fontecchio and Quentin Grimes is probably the headliners here. I'm hoping if we have time, we could also talk a little bit about Troy Brown Jr., Shake Milton, and Malachi Flynn, because I think, you know, those three guys have potential to play. But let's dive into Simone Fontecchio first. What are your thoughts of him as a player, the type of guy or the type of wing that the Pistons are getting back here to plug right into the rotation?
Yeah, so I personally really like him. I loved when I heard the news that he was coming to Detroit. I mean, he's a wing who can shoot and defend at least a little bit above average. I've been reading some like Utah Jazz articles, and they're all saying that he improved as a defender this year. So hopefully you continue to see that. He is, although it's his second year in the NBA, he is 28 years old. He spent some time overseas before coming over. So I get he is a little bit older, but he's still 28. The Pistons can look to retain him on a multi-year deal, and you're still like getting younger compared to a guy like Bogdanović, who clearly did not fit the timeline of this team. I think offensively, if you're putting Fontecchio in a similar role to Bojan, it's a little bit of a step down. But again, like just adjusting to someone who can more like complement this roster for the long haul, I think it's a great move. And again, like I didn't hear Fontecchio's name in trade rumors until Tuesday night, I believe, that he was possibly on the table and some contenders were looking in to see if they could bring him in. And for the Pistons to be able to go and get him for a pretty low price, like essentially just that second round pick, which we don't know what that second round pick is going to be. This draft, everyone is saying, is much weaker compared to last year's and even historically. You don't know who's going to stay in this draft. You don't know who's going to be available at that point. So I like going out and getting a guy like Fontecchio and hopefully retaining him once we're into the summer and can discuss like a longer term contract.
Oh yeah. I mean, the value here on that trade is fantastic. He's a restricted free agent this off season. So you have all of the methods possible that you could, you know, guarantee him being on the roster next year. As a player, like, all right, look, here's his per game stats. It's 8.9 points per game, 3.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists. He's shooting 45% from the floor, 39% from three, and 80% from the free throw line. Now all of that is not including, or is including a section of time where he came off the bench. Okay, so as a starter, which I feel pretty confident in assuming he's going to be a starter in Detroit, as he was for the majority of the season in Utah. But as a starter, he averaged 10.4 points, 4.3 rebounds, 2 assists, and he shot 43% from the floor, 37% from three, and 80% from the line. So look, this is a 3-and-D player, all right, to a T. He's 6'8". He's got long arms. He's a decent athlete. I think not a lot of people are really appreciating that he's actually a pretty good NBA athlete. You know, he's no slouch. He's not going to put his chin on the rim or anything like that, but he's a good athlete. He's a pretty good defender. He's engaged on that end. You'll see him make a few weak side blocks every now and then. That'll be pretty impressive. And he really is a pretty good communicator. At least it seems like it in the Jazz games I've watched. And I do think he can do a little bit more off the bounce than what people are going to give him credit for. This is not just a pure catch and shoot player. Okay. So I went in and I looked at the stats. These are all from NBA.com, but you know, he was the 73rd percentile as a cutter, so he can finish around the rim. He was okay in transition. But the real, I think, interesting area that maybe you could mine here for a little bit more value offensively is that in a pretty low volume, he was in the 82nd percentile on dribble handoffs. And, you know, it makes sense, right? He's a very good shooter. He's a very good shooter off the bounce. I wonder if there's, you know, not a Bojan level scoring basis that you can get to here, but, you know, maybe you could see that 10 points jump up to 13, 14, 15. I kind of do think that that's within the realm of possibility here on a little bit more of a higher volume in Detroit. I think this is a fantastic pickup on this. He's the exact player that this team needed on the roster. I would have loved it if you could put him next to Bojan, but he's the perfect player for this roster.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I was interested to see what it would look like playing those two together if Bojan did stay. And also just flipping to like the defensive side of the ball, like Doug McMenamin in the chat brings up that mm-hmm. we Detroit probably improved defensively overall through the deals that he made. And I think, like, I just brought up comparing Fontecchio offensively to Bojan. I think Fontecchio is clearly a much better defender than Bogdanovich was and probably will. Yep. Like, we know what he is defensively. So I think if Fontecchio can continue to improve as a defender, or at least just, like, be what he was this season in Utah, that is a step up defensively for this team, not even going into, like, Quentin Grimes and a Troy Brown Jr. who can also play defense as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you're spot on that. And assisting with the defense a little bit here, let's talk about Quentin Grimes. Let's get a little breakdown on his game and what he's going to bring to Detroit. So I want to throw a couple of stats here at you, Blake, and then kind of let you riff off those. But this season, he's averaging 7.3 points, 2 rebounds, 1.2 assists, only shooting 39% from the floor, 36% from three, and 70% from the free throw line. So he has struggled, and those percentages are low. And I do want to bring up probably the most concerning thing here. Again, this is from NBA.com, but 38th percentile in the NBA in spot-up shooting. So that's not great. However, 65th percentile in transition. He's a good athlete. 58th percentile on dribble handoffs, because, again, he can get downhill. He's got pretty good size for kind of that guard-wing combo. And he is a very good defender, like we just mentioned. He's got some good length. He can handle a lot of really difficult perimeter matchups. You probably would be shifting him down a little bit more so than up. Size could become a problem for him. You know, I think he's only 210, 215 in terms of his weight with being 6'5". But I think here's the intriguing thing, right? Last season, Quentin Grimes, 11.3 points per game, 3.2 rebounds, 2.1 assists, and he shot 47% from the floor, 39% from three, and 80% from the free throw line on about 30 minutes per game. Like, do you think Detroit can find that guy when they insert him to the rotation here?
Yeah, I mean, I think a role change could go very big for a guy like Quentin Grimes. Like, he just did not the trajectory in New York, like, wasn't what a lot of people expected it to be. Like, I expected him to be a long-term piece for them, and the regression this year is very strange. Like you just said, we know what he can do shooting the ball. It hasn't looked great this year, or at least has just taken a step back. I also just in general think the free throw numbers is really weird. Like, I hope he at least turns that around a bit when he gets here. But bringing him into a situation like Detroit where he's gonna have a much bigger role, I'm assuming why they went out and made these deals, sent out Alec Burks and Bogdanovich, who were really valued pieces for this team. Like you said, that's 33 points per game that we no longer have in exchange for Quentin Grimes. I think the plan is really to figure out what needs to be done for Grimes to get back to what we've already seen him be able to do. And maybe it just is as simple as a new role for him. So I'm hoping that's the case. And again, like you said, defensively, he's going to bring a ton to the team. And I've seen videos of him, like, getting the top assignment for oppositions and locking them down. So that takes some responsibility or pressure off of Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey if he is playing alongside of them mostly. So we know the player is there. So I feel like at this point, you have to at least think that this situation change can bring the Quentin Grimes that we've seen out of him.
I agree. And you know, if he just could find his jump shot, right, I think it really opens up everything for him. That's just looking at the numbers, that's probably why he fell out of favor there in New York, because it wasn't the defense, and we know how Thibodeau operates. But here's what I want to say about Quentin Grimes, and then I think we move on to the next two guys briefly before giving, like, one bigger takeaway and then diving into questions. But I don't want anybody to think that Quentin Grimes is a similar gamble for the Pistons that Marvin Bagley and James Wiseman were. You know, I get it. These are all three of those guys were definitely second draft guys. Okay. It was definitely a gamble on potential. And if that guy can figure out in Detroit, you know, it's going to be worth it. You know, everything will make sense. But here's the difference. Okay. Quentin Grimes has at least two solid seasons of very good 3-and-D wing basketball in New York for good teams. Okay. James Wiseman never had that. James Wiseman was hurt a lot of his career before coming to Detroit. Marvin Bagley never had that. You know, he had kind of fallen out of favor after his rookie year. And if anyone remembers, you know, they were having him spot up as a power forward in the corner at the time that he was traded for by the Pistons. Quentin Grimes is having a down year. Yes. But it's year three. He'll be going into year four. And years one and two, he put up solid numbers. I mean, I'll read it off again. 11.3 points, 3.2 rebounds, 2.1 assists on slashing 47, 39, 80 in almost 30 minutes a game last season for a very good New York Knicks team, a playoff team. He was a key cog as a 3-and-D kind of guard wing hybrid player. There's no hypothetical here. The question is just if he can get back to that. You know, if what's happened this season in New York is the outlier, we're not questioning if he can figure it out and be a really good NBA player. He's figured it out. We're questioning if he can do it again, if that makes sense. So I it's a much better gamble. That's all I want to say. You know, I just want to make sure it's not Marvin Bagley. It's not James Wiseman.
Right. Yeah. I did not see the acquisition of Grimes as like a lottery ticket that we've seen Troy Weaver try to buy and hit on. So like you said, we know that there is a very solid NBA player in there. And just like New York right now is a total different situation. Like he is being asked to contribute to a team that is trying to contend and potentially make a finals run. We know Detroit is nowhere near close to that right now and probably for a while. So he has at least these like 30 games once he gets here to sort of just like play more free, I feel like, and just hopefully in like a less pressured environment. And I'm sure that Monty Williams is going to try to draw some things up for him to try to get him going. And if he does have a hot night, keep feeding him the ball, keep drawing things up for him. So I like that in terms of figuring it out, at least in the immediate future. I'm not saying he can go out and just like chuck every night. Like, we don't want to be the worst team historically in NBA history, but it is just like a less pressured environment that I feel like can help you get out of a slump like that. On top of just being like a role change and new situation in general.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dive into some of your guys' questions here. We'll be doing both from the live chat and then obviously a few that have been pre-submitted, you know, Twitter or in the DBB article. Guys, if you want to get your question in beforehand, you can also just message us on either Blake or I on Twitter. Feel free to do that. So let's do this first one here from Doug McMiniman, our guy. Just saw him over at the Pistons Pulse stream just before hopping onto this one. So appreciate you, man. All Pistons all the time tonight. Love it. But he asked, would you guys look to extend Mike Muscala and or Danilo Gallinari this summer?
Yeah. First, I mean, shout out to you again, Doug. Appreciate you joining and asking all the questions. And yeah, check out the Pistons Pulse and Doug's work as well. But personally right now, I would think about retaining Muscala, try to bring him in for another season or two, just like when he came in and it wasn't like a very big trade. Like, we're getting rid of Marvin Bagley and Isaiah Livers for Muscala and Gallinari. Like, you wouldn't think that would move the needle too much, but just a player with Muscala's archetype on the floor, like being able to play five out, having a big who can operate around the perimeter, like has allowed this team to play competitive basketball. If maybe that is a guy that the Pistons try to target in the offseason, whether it's free agency or draft. But having a veteran like Muscala who could at least like do that and provide that role, I think provides some benefit to the group. So I wouldn't be shocked if they extended him. Gallinari is a little like I'm not sure about right now. We've seen some flashes from him since he came to Detroit. I mean, he hasn't got a ton of minutes and has got like DNP'd in a ton of games and coming off the injury. We don't know how much more he really has left in the tank. I mean, this team can't have enough shooting. So I think if they were to retain Gallinari, it would be on like a minimum 1-year deal. But I'm sort of leaning toward the no side on Gallo. But I would definitely be more inclined to extend Muscala.
I think I lean your direction. I would probably be more inclined to extend Muscala than Gallinari. I will say I don't think this is going to be an and situation. I would expect it to be an or. You know, it's one of the two. If you look at the fives that the team has on the roster, you know, James Wiseman probably not coming back next season. Obviously, you have Jalen Duren. But really, Isaiah Stewart's a five, okay? You know, we're going to keep saying it on this podcast. I know they keep playing him at the four. But Isaiah Stewart is a five in an ideal situation. So if you can augment the roster to make sure that that happens, which, you know, maybe we get into it, but I kind of think they already did that at the deadline. Regardless, you got Jalen Duren and you've got Isaiah Stewart backing him up. Either of these guys are going to be the third center. And I'd be totally fine with it being either of them. I think in the limited time that we've seen Gallinari, he's played well enough. So whoever you want to bring back as a veteran guy that really only plays in an injury situation, which, you know, I think is quietly becoming a storyline with Isaiah Stewart, right? He's had some not significant injuries, but he's missed time almost every season. So, you know, they're probably going to play, but not a lot of minutes, and only in the case that someone gets hurt. I'm kind of take your pick on either of those guys. Let's jump into this one here from @Base Pistons. Wants us to talk about Malachi Flynn. What might he bring to the team, and do you think he might be here long term?
Yeah, Flynn was an interesting one. I mean, when he was brought in and we still had like, what, 19 guys on the roster, like I didn't know if he was going to be someone who would be waived. It ended up being Killian Hayes. I see him as nothing more than the third guard on this team right now. I don't know if he can really be long term. I guess it depends if he gets minutes and how he looks in those minutes. Once we see him get some time, it really depends on the trajectory of Marcus Sasser, I think. These moves and waiving Killian Hayes definitely opens up more minutes for Sasser, who we've seen play phenomenally. Go through some streaks here and there. But I see Sasser as like the longer term backup point guard for this group. And Malachi Flynn, like Wes, what you were saying with the third big, maybe Flynn could be the third guard on this team, but I don't really see it as anything more than that. And maybe at that point, they just look at someone else on the free agent market that's more of a veteran to bring in that situation. So I'll be interested to see him play, but I'm not sure how much of a like long-term piece he is for this team, if any.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not sure if, you know, it's going to be a long-term thing. I will say I do like Malachi Flynn. I think he's a solid but small point guard. You know, he doesn't have the best numbers from the floor in terms of field goal percentage, but, you know, he's a decent shooter. He's got history of that. He's a decent playmaker. He's an okay defender. Like, he's one of these guys that I think could probably have a good long career as maybe the third point guard on a lot of teams. So I expect that to be the role he has here in Detroit for the rest of the season. I would say I do bet he plays. I mean, we've already seen Marcus Sasser hit a wall once this season after a prolonged period of high minutes. And that's not unexpected, right? I mean, he's a rookie. This is the most basketball he has played in a single stretch of time over his life. All right. This is the most intense it's been. So if he hits a second wall and needs a break, or he gets hurt because of the stress, like, I could definitely see Malachi Flynn getting minutes. And even beyond that, you know, I think he's solid enough where if Sasser's just having an off night, you could turn to him and, you know, he won't sink the ship, so to speak. So like I did really like Malachi Flynn getting added. I don't think he's really a throw-in per se. I think it's an upgrade over Killian Hayes for this role. But, you know, at the same time, a lot of guys can do that. So whether you keep him after this season or not probably just comes down to the contract negotiation. And, you know, at that point, I have no idea what the play is going to be. So let's dive into this one here from Big Cheese. He says, Dante DiVincenzo seemed to take Grimes out of the Knicks equation. What is the biggest concern about Grimes, or rather ceiling and floor with him in a Detroit Pistons uniform?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest concern immediately is just the shooting regression we've seen this year. Again, like we've already talked about, hopefully it's something that we see immediate improvement on when he steps on the floor in a Pistons uniform, but maybe that's not the case. Maybe it takes more time. Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe he's in his own head, and maybe it does take a little bit more time. I think that's the biggest concern. When I've been watching Knicks games, I haven't really seen any, I guess, step back defensively through scoring slumps or anything like that. So I think like the floor with him on this team is being a good defender. That said, like the shot has to work. We've seen so many different rotations where we have way too many non-shooters out on the floor and it really jams everything up and the offense hits a wall. So I think that needs to, like, hopefully it's something he can address quickly. And in terms of the ceiling for him, like, I can see him being a long-term starter on this team next to Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey and Durin and whoever else is going to be at the four spot, whether it's Asar or Fontecchio or hopefully not Stewart, because I don't think that lineup is as optimal. But you know, he's on his like rookie deal. He's extension eligible this offseason, as is Cade. So I can see him being like a true long-term piece for this team as long as the shot goes back to what we've already seen it in his time with New York other than this season.
So I think you're right to bring up the jump shot, right? And I want to put it this way. You know, he's taken a dip this season, right? So if we're just looking from three-point percentage on the year, last year was 39%, this year's 36, which is league average, okay? Like, it's not like he's, you know, shooting, you know, Sar Thompson levels from three this season when he's been cold. He's still a pretty good shooter. The thing that red flags the most to me is that, you know, I said it earlier, he's in the 38th percentile as a spot-up guy, which is just a problem, right? Like, that's the majority of his shots, all right? And he's not being all that efficient with them. I don't know if that means he's missing a lot of wide-open looks or if, you know, he's taking a ton of contested catch-and-shoot threes. I'm not sure what the situation is here, but the fact that he's that inefficient on catch and shoot, you know, spot up reps is not great, even though, you know, 36, I think at this point, if you said that you found a good defender who would shoot 36% from three on the wing and could start at the three, like, I think we all would have taken that at this point in the season. They need that. Even 36%, they need above league average from three. And he, you know, he does that. And he is a good defender, like you said. And long term, you know, I'm with you. I do think he can be a starter. He lets you do creative things with Cade Cunningham defensively, just the type of player he is. He could guard one through three. Okay. So if you've got a matchup, I think you can start him at the three. And if you've got a matchup where, you know, you're playing, a guard like Damian Lillard or something, and you don't want Cade to guard him, well, Grimes can handle that, and you can stick Cade out on the wing. At the same time, if you've got a really good wing player who's not, you know, taller than like 6'8", then Grimes can take him, and it's not going to be a problem. So, Big Cheese, to your question there, he doesn't really have an in-between game. It's pretty much Morey ball, at least from what I've seen. You know, he gets to the rim, or he's shooting the three, which is not a negative, right? Again, at a low volume, this team needs it. So I'm worried about his catch and shoot. I'm not that worried about his actual three-point shot. There's so much history here of him being a good three-point shooter. I'm worried that he's just not going to be a fantastic catch and shoot guy. If he fixes that, man, you know, he solves a lot of problems for Detroit. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, like you said, he's not going to have the ball in his hands a ton playing alongside of Cade and Ivy. So if he could improve those spot up numbers and just turn into like somewhat of a knockdown guy, I think that will go so far. And like you said, it's one of the concerns, but we've seen him be a strong shooter in this league. So again, we know it's in there, and hopefully all it is a new role, new situation that helps unlock it for him.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dive into this next one here from Rames in the DBB comments. He wants to know what our record is going to be after the deadline. Blake, you answer first.
Oh my gosh, this is a tough one. I'm just going to use like 30 games as a marker. I think at the top end, we can win 8 or 9 of them. Hopefully, we don't get any less than like 5 more wins in like the last 30 games. I think just where this team is record wise, I truly think like you have to compete for not being the worst team in NBA history. And like that just sounds so bad to say, but I think it was JJ Redick's podcast that I was listening to with Tim Legler. They both have played for bad teams, and Legg said he was on a team that was in range of having like the worst record of all time. And he said like the whole group really took it upon themselves that they didn't want to do that. So I'm hoping like at least that's what this team is competing for. And we've seen them play more competitive basketball really since the Muscala and Gallo trade. So hopefully that continues. I mean, the roster just turned over so much. It's kind of hard to tell like what it's going to look like, how long it's going to take for these guys to gel together. But last night, Wednesday night in Sacramento, they went out and won a game that no one expected them to win. When Cade Cunningham wasn't out there, Stewart wasn't out there, Bogdanovich wasn't out there. So when we went through that long losing streak, we didn't really see that. Though the Pistons winning games that they shouldn't have is something that we've seen over the past few years. And I think we're getting more back to that. Wes, I know you've compared like the Orlando Magic second half of the season from last year to hopefully something we can get to. I think that's what you shoot for. I don't know how realistic it is, but optimistically, I hope they can at least win like 8 or 9 of their last 30.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how realistic the whole Magic thing is either. Once they went on that 28-game losing streak, right? That I felt like that kind of went out the window. But, you know, you bring up a great point. This is, what, 8 new players? There's a lot of new guys wearing a Piston uniform to finish out this season. That's going to take a minute. So that's kind of the wild card here. How long do all of these players get acclimated to each other before you start seeing it really pay off? But let me just read off the names. All right. So you got Cade Cunningham, Marcus Sasser, Jaden Ivey, Shake Milton, Quentin Grimes, Troy Brown Jr., Simone Fontecchio, Asar Thompson, Jalen Duren, Isaiah Stewart, Malachi Flynn, Mike Muscala, Danilo Gallinari, and Evan Fournier. Look, that is an NBA roster. Okay. Almost every one of those guys. And James Wiseman. You're right. But for the most part, like almost every one of those guys is playing fringe minutes at a minimum somewhere else. Okay. Like you look at Muscala, Gallinari, Flynn, and Fournier, they weren't. Okay. And they're probably, well, maybe Muscala gets some minutes here, but at least three of those guys are not getting minutes in Detroit either. But all of your 10-man rotation now, you can fill it up with legitimate NBA players. And this is no slight here to Kevin Knox or to Killian Hayes, but those were fringe NBA players, okay? It was not a guarantee that those types of players were going to have roles on other teams. You have more than 10 players now that would at least play almost in every other roster in the league. And you've got shooters. So, you know, we talked about it a little bit during that 28-game losing streak, but they were so bad at shooting the basketball and putting the ball in the hoop that they couldn't even accidentally win a game. You know, like you look at that Kings game. Yeah, they shouldn't have won it, but who would have thought that Alec Burks would have gone nuts like that and Jaden Ivey would have hit, you know, two or three fourth quarter threes. Like they have the guns now to go make a bunch of shots, have a couple guys get hot, and you just like you find yourself winning a game that you shouldn't have. You know, you accidentally did it. You stumbled into one. Great. So long story short, I think eight's, like you said, a pretty good number. I think they could get up to 15 or 16 and hopefully avoid, you know, nine, which I think is the record. They could go a little bit, you know, a little bit higher. I wouldn't bank on it. But no matter what happens here, you've got to build some momentum, right? You've got to build a little bit of momentum. So I think you're right. I'm calling it to the same spot. I think, you know, 15 or 16 wins by the end of the season is probably where they're going to end up. This is from a Twitter question. This is from our guy, Richard Brooks. I appreciate you, man. And guys, if you're listening on Twitter, again, feel free. You can put in your question. We're going to get it on this end now, StreamYard updated. So pretty exciting stuff there. But he says, Richard Brooks, prior to the deadline, the usage priority was Cade, Bojan Bogdanović, and then Jalen Duren and Jaden Ivey. How do you see that shaking out after the deadline? And I want to add this really quick. So we mentioned it earlier in the podcast, but if you look at points per game, sending out between Bojan and Burks, you lost about 13, and coming back is about 17 or 18. So pretty significant drop off. How do you see all these additional touches, all these additional shots? How do you think that's all going to shake out?
Yeah, Wes, you said it towards the start of the podcast, like all these moves and who stayed on the roster and who's no longer here was definitely a vote of confidence from the front office in Jaden Ivey. I mean, I don't think they've really ever done anything to make us think that Jaden Ivey wasn't a priority. But I see like a lot more usage going to Ivy. And I mean, coming off of like, we're recording this the day after Jaden Ivey dropped 37 points and like really Sacramento couldn't do anything to stop him. He was making everything he put up. So I'm going to like focus on him because I think a majority of it is going to go to him when you don't have a guy like Bojan or even Burks on the floor that are hunting shots, can go and get you a bucket when you need it. Like you're asking your younger guys to go and be that player. Ivy, I mean, we've seen him work through some stuff, but we've also seen him take over, especially recently. So I think a lot of it is going to go towards him. But that said, like you're also clearing up some usage and shots for Marcus Sasser, who had shot the ball incredibly well. And also your new pieces like Quinn Grimes and Fontecchio. So, and also just shout out to Jalen Duren, who had 20 points, like 15 boards and 6 assists when Ivy put up 37 points. So he's going to get his as well. But the main beneficiary of all the usage that we're sending out to me is Jaden Ivy.
Watch, I just don't know what the alternative is. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, yeah, Marcus Sasser is probably going to get some more shots, but he's been getting more shots playing next to Monte Morris off the bench. That was already up. They've already been experimenting with Jalen Duren as more of an initiator. He's been getting more shots because of that. All that stuff's already up. I don't know who else outside of the guys they're bringing in could really step into that role as being the secondary go-to scorer other than Jaden Ivey. So, yeah, you know, I think this is a vote of confidence in Jaden Ivey. You know, Bojan 20 points per game, Burks was 13 points per game, and you just drop that about in half. And Jaden Ivey's going to be the one to catch a lot of it. And he's peaking at the right time for this too, right? I mean, we're not going to really get to talk about it, but that game against the Sacramento Kings, he was incredible. He was incredible. Crazy. And I think the best part, you might have tweeted this, but he's sitting at 37 points. There's about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left. And what does he do? Well, he goes out and he gets two assists to ice the game. He doesn't hunt his shot. He's not going for 40. He just wants to win. This is, you know, he's an unselfish guy. He plays the game the right way. I love Jaden Ivey. I'm so happy he's out of the doghouse now at this point in the season. So, yeah, you know, I think usage-wise, it's going to be Cade 1A, Jaden Ivey 1B. Everything else is going to shake out from there. I do think, Doug McMenamin, you bring this up. I do think Fontecchio has some room to expand. Like I said earlier, I don't think he's going to get to 20 points per game or anything like that. But, you know, I think 15's in the cards. He's averaging about 11 as a starter for Utah over about 34, 35 games. And that's on very low usage. He's so efficient. And, you know, I brought up the handoffs, which is a play type that Detroit uses quite a bit here under Monty Williams. I think there's a little bit of room here for some ceiling. You know, not a ton, but, you know, an extra 3, 4, 5 points a night. I think that's in the cards. So, long story short, that was my biggest trade deadline takeaway from this entire day and this entire, you know, month and a half, I guess, since the Marvin Bagley deal. The front office has a ton of faith in Jaden Ivey. And guess what? They couldn't do that if Monty Williams didn't have any faith in Jaden Ivey. All right. The coach is involved in all of these moves as well. So the whole organization, this is a, hey, Jaden, we believe in you. You're the guy. Go get some buckets for us. We're building around you and Cade. And I couldn't be happier about that. I mean, say what you will about the value that they may or may not have been able to get for Bojan Bogdanović and Alec Burks, but that message alone does go a long way for me. That makes me pretty happy, I've got to say.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a little like, I understand why, but I'm a little bummed that the Ivy's like 37 point night is being a bit overshadowed by all these moves, but that's a say.
Yeah, we
like,
got to give him his flowers.
Yeah, you can't like say enough good things about Jaden Ivey recently, as well as that game that he had last night. And yeah, those like two assists to ice the game were really like what stuck out to me, when like a lot of players in that situation, like they want like the 40. Jaden Ivey was doing what he can to find the right bucket, the right teammate to ice that game. And when he's cooking like that, like the defense is trying to do anything they can to stop him. So it opens up looks elsewhere. So I thought that was a really like mature and great teammate just thing for him to do, on top of like going off for 37 points.
And I think we can kind of pivot this into this comment here from Mark Faust. Not necessarily a question, but, you know, wanted to bring it up. So he says he does have a concern that they didn't really replace the shot creation, like we've been talking about, from Alec Burks and Bojan Bogdanović. The spacing and defense are definitely nice and improved, but with Cade, Ivy, and Duren, he would still bet on the defense being a bit below average. And, you know, I wanted to bring this up because, you know, we're talking about, hey, we think that this is an organization that's really prioritizing Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey. Well, they have a chance to kind of walk the walk. Let's put it that way. All right. Because Quentin Grimes, we talked about it, 36% shooter this year. He's a good shooter. They're going to guard him like a shooter, and he's a very good defender. He can start out on the wing. Simone Fontecchio, good defender, 6'8", long arms, great shooter, probably a little bit of room for him to grow in terms of the volume offensively that he provides. He can start at the four. Like, if you really want to invest here and put Cade Cunningham in a position where we say, hey, prove it. You know, we're going to find out what you are. We're going to take away all the excuses. If you want to do the same thing for Jaden Ivey, prove it. We're going to take away all your excuses. You two figure it out and make it work. Well, if you can provide spacing that Grimes and Fontecchio can provide and the defensive versatility that those two can provide, with Grimes being able to guard down to the guard position as well as having a lob threat here in Jalen Duren, who's, you know, hopefully improving as a defender. I mean, you can't set it up better for two guards to really go and show out. So, you know, I guess I'm pivoting this into a bit of a rotation discussion, but what are the chances you think that they do that? You know, that they really do put the chips here into the middle of the table and put it all behind Cade and Ivy? Like, you know, we kind of think they should.
Yeah. I
loaded
think
question.
I think that's what it's moving towards. And yeah, Doug has brought up like Asar Thompson in the chat as well. Like, we know he's a non-shooter right now, but he can create shots. He can score at the rim. Hopefully the shot comes along at some point. I don't know how long that would take. But yeah, this really is like just buying into the core. I mean, when this losing streak was going on, we were talking about which one of the core four of Cade, Ivy, Duren, and Thompson we would be okay with letting go of to make the overall roster better. But I feel like the front office has really just bought into that being the core, giving them more runway. Like, yeah, like Mark brings up the shot creation that Burks and Bojan brought, like, is tough to replace. Like, we don't really have that on the roster right now. Like, veterans that we can go to that are going to get a bucket when the young guys are maybe going through it, but Cade's in year three, Ivy's in year two. Like, it's time for them to really just have the full keys, and hopefully we put some like better players around them that are going to complement their style of play, not just for the immediate future, like Bojan kind of was to me, but for the long haul, like a guy like Fontecchio that you can hopefully retain, similar to Grimes if he's like a long-term piece, and maybe even someone that they brought in is a three-point shooter off the bench as well, or they find someone in free agency as well. But I think that, like you said, these moves are really just betting on the core that you already have and putting a competent roster around it, which we didn't have, and hopefully bringing in even more talent this offseason with all the cap space as well as a top five draft pick as well. So to me, it really is like Cade and Ivy's team. Ivy looked like a star last night. So yeah, it's going to be tough to replace what Burks and Bojan brought, but the thought is hopefully some of these new guys are going to contribute to this team for years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Doug brought up Asar, so just really quickly want to say one thing on that, right? Is that we know what Asar Thompson needs. He's not a shooter, so he needs to be around the hoop, and he's really, really excelled next to a spacing five like Mike Muscala. So, you know, I think you can kind of look at this in groupings in a way, because Asar Thompson next to Isaiah Stewart as a 4-5 pairing off the bench, man, that's perfect. That's exciting. That's great defense. That's versatile. And Isaiah Stewart can shoot, right? And Asar Thompson could be the guy around the hoop. And then you look in the starting lineup and, you know, obviously Duren fits pretty well with Cade and Ivy, but if you could get Grimes and Fontecchio being versatile wing defenders, like, now that one makes sense too. And hey, Sasser's coming off the bench and playing a lot of minutes with Asar and Stewart as well. And like it all starts to kind of work now. Like you could see it a little bit with this roster. And And that's just pretty exciting. Let's hit on a couple more before we close it out. And keep kind of, I noticed that you did put in a question about the depth chart, which we kind of just talked about. So we're not going to do it again. But yes, this other good question. Keep Khan says, other than Simone and Quentin Grimes, do you think any other players that the Pistons just acquired is going to be part of the rotation? Blake, what do you think?
Yeah, the main one that sticks out to me is Troy Brown Jr. He is someone like that the Lakers brought in last year to just be a piece that can help them compete. And as another just like defender, like we've seen the issues this team has had defensively, and bringing in a defensive minded player like that who can hopefully shoot it decently well, I can see him like finding a decent role with this team off the bench. So he's the main one that sticks out to me. Also, Shake Milton is a really interesting one. He hasn't been good this year, just straight up. I mean, every other year he's been in Philadelphia. This year he was in Minnesota. So I wonder, like, the weird role and just drastic like volume change, how much that has to do with that. I could see them giving Shake a little bit of run just to be that like scorer, 3-point shooter off the bench. Whether that works out is up in the air. But mainly I'm going towards Troy Brown Jr. here, but I can also see a role or world where Shake contributes to this team and finds a way in the rotation.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would put more, you know, confidence behind Troy Brown Jr. But you know, I do want to say with both of them, you know, we talked about Quentin Grimes having a bit of a fall off statistically this season. Well, these guys both did too. So Troy Brown Jr., 4.2 points, 1.9 rebounds, and about one assist on 44, 37, 86 slashes, which, you know, his efficiency is pretty solid. He's just not playing a lot on a very, very good Minnesota team. Last season with the Lakers, 7 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist on very similar numbers from the field, 3-point line and free throw line. So, you know, he's a good defender too. He's only 24. He's a good athlete. Like, there's something in there. And I'd be kind of intrigued to mine it and see if they can figure out, you know, more of a long-term piece there. So he's got a shot. You know, I'd even say into next season, there's a chance that he could stick around. And then Shake Milton too, right? So this season, about 5 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 40 from the floor, 26 from three, 82 from the free throw line. But just last season, right? 8 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, 48, 38, 85 in 20 minutes per game for a pretty good Sixers team. So, you know, with both of these guys, we're asking the question, why were they much better last year than they are this year? And is that something that they can figure out in Detroit? And, you know, I guess to that point, these were both kind of fringe rotation guys on a Minnesota team that's competing for the number one seed in the West. All right. So they're good players and they were getting minutes. It just, you know, it wasn't the type of role they were used to. Well, Detroit is not competing for the first seed in the East. I could definitely see both of them playing. You know, like if they trot out a bench lineup of Sasser, Milton, Troy Brown, Asar Thompson, and Isaiah Stewart, or even Mike Muscala, like that would work. I think that would make a lot of sense, assuming that these guys are, you know, less what they are this season and more what they were for the majority of their careers. So, yeah, I mean, one or both of those two, I think, is definitely going to play. And you've always got Malachi Flynn there too, right? You know, if there's an injury to Cade, he's missed some time this season with this knee injury that he's got. Flynn could probably step up, either start or come off the bench. Wouldn't be the end of the world, like we had talked about. So let's try and do one more question.
While you're pulling it up, Wes, I just also wanted to mention in reference to Brown and Shake Milton, like both of them are low risk players to bring in. Like neither of them are on the books past this season. Troy Brown does have $4 million non-guaranteed for next year. So if they did want to retain him, that's a very like cheap and good contract. So I think it's a nice, like, see what you can do in these last 30 or so games. And if it makes sense to bring him back, then you have the room to do so.
Yeah, that's a great point. They're really low risk players, and there is legitimate upside with both of them. You know, they could be legitimate rotation players. You know, not, I don't know, Shake, not so much next season, but Troy Brown, there's legitimately upside there. He is only 6'4". Mm-hmm. All right, 6'4". Sorry, 24. Whew, long day, guys. Long day. Last question. This is from Base Pistons again. We appreciate all your questions, man. He says, why did the Pistons waive Killian Hayes and not James Wiseman? Blake, so, your answer.
So I'm gonna shout out Keith Smith here, who said, and he's written this before, he said that Killian has always been finding minutes with Monty Williams, and it was kind of like a money ball situation where the manager can't play the player anymore because the GM traded him. Maybe that's a little bit of it here. Killian always seemed to find a way to get minutes. Last night, or Wednesday night in Sacramento, he started. That was because of injury. But again, like, Killian, as opposed to Wiseman, is trying, in my eyes, to open up a larger role, give more run to Marcus Sasser. Also, like, you're bringing in Malachi Flynn. Like, I think between him and Hayes, like, you kind of just have to let go of one point guard anyway. And then the backup big rotate, like, Jalen Duren's missed time, Isaiah Stewart's missed time, Mike Muscala just had that concussion, nothing serious, but I think they just had, like, too many point guards compared to backup bigs. The backup big role has been an issue with this team. And I guess, like, Wiseman is now their break glass in case of emergency insurance policy. I don't think he has any future. And also, just one more note with Hayes, like, it seemed like it was just time. Like, there were those rumblings that he wanted a trade. We'll see where he lands, what a new situation possibly looks like for him. But it also just seemed like there was an element that his time was up in Detroit.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up too. You know, it was some great reporting by Omari Sankofa of the Detroit Free Press. Guys, if you're not reading him, please do. He's great. But he talked about how Killian Hayes kind of put in a soft trade request. You know, he made it known that, hey, the writing's on the wall. You know, the writing was on the wall even last offseason with the moves that they made, bringing in Monte Morris, drafting Marcus Sasser. He would have been open to moving on and would have appreciated a trade. Obviously, they weren't able to make that happen. There was some rumblings that maybe the Grizzlies were interested. You know, you always take those trade rumors with a bit of a grain of salt. You don't know where they're coming from. Obviously, you know, who knows? Could have been coming from Killian's camp. Could have been coming from Memphis trying to, like, push up value on their other guys like David Roddy, who they did trade. You never know with some of these rumors that kind of come out of the mill. But, yeah, I think the reason Killian was moved and let go in this case and not James Wiseman is he wanted to leave. And James Wiseman, at least publicly, has not said he wants to leave. You know, so at that point, look, I don't know if waiving a 7th overall pick still on their rookie deal is a favor to that guy. Like, that doesn't look, from a player perspective, that doesn't look great, you know? Like, you were such a negative trade asset that no one was willing to give up anything for you, and your team didn't want you, so you just got waived. You know, like, that doesn't look good, and I feel bad. I feel bad, honestly, for Killian Hayes on that. I really hope he lands on his feet. I really hope that he can kind of show out here wherever he ends up and get a decent contract next season and stick in the NBA, because, you know, no one here is going to be rooting for guys to fail, right? Yeah. So, like, hoping for the best there. It's not an awesome situation. So, I don't want to say that they did him a favor by cutting him loose. at the same time, you know, he wasn't going to play.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to be behind Malachi Flynn. He would have been, what, the fourth point guard and the third shooting guard, if you don't count Marcus Sasser jumping up to the two occasionally, right? Like, this might be the best thing for him. So,
yeah.
Not a great situation, but I think that's why.
Agreed. Yeah, it's definitely like a sad ending for a seventh overall pick still on his rookie deal. But yeah, like Wes said, hoping for the best for Killian. Like, the issue was he just showed so many flashes, but he never could like string it together. And again, just hoping for the best for him, and hopefully he lands somewhere. And yeah, it's tough, but the Killian Hayes era in Detroit is over. And on that super sad note, we are going to call it for our trade deadline marathon. Man, this was a crazy one. I feel like next week we'll definitely spend some more time talking about actual basketball. We're recording this on Thursday night. The Pistons are on a West Coast swing. They're in Portland tonight. Who knows who's going to be in uniform for that one? They have like 7 guys available to play.
They called up the two-way guys.
Yeah. Oh, man. And just to note, the Crews were in Maine. So getting from Maine to Portland, Oregon does not sound easy. So it'll be an interesting one. Everyone stay up for that one. It'll be a fun game. And special thank you to Sean Cork, managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys. And just an additional shout out to Sean for jumping in and filling in for me last week. And also, he's been through it through the trade deadline, writing nonstop after all these deals that the Pistons made. So check out Sean's work and all of our work at DetroitBadBoys.com. And shout out to everyone who joined, whether you're listening live or the next day when we post it to whatever podcast platform you're listening to it on. We truly appreciate your great questions and talking points. We'll catch you next week, whether live with us here or on your commute. We can't wait to talk more Detroit hoops with you.